anybody can make a decent product, but what are these companies doing to support snowboarding, to give back to the culture, to give back to the industry, and support the right people and the right way? Like, one thing that's really annoying these days is these ambassadors getting flow and product, and it's more so on the girl side of thing, mm-hmm. when there's these other girls who are working so hard, skilled, passionate, and they're barely getting support because maybe they're not as pretty a face or any mm-hmm. of this other bullshit. So mm-hmm. that kind of stuff is really annoying. So we want the brands who are doing it the right way.
Layers, the unintentional culture of snowboarding by Nitro Snowboards. For our new movie Layers, we interviewed important people and personalities that contribute to the global community of snowboarding. And since most of these interviews were too long to show in the documentary, and they were so interesting, we created this podcast so you can enjoy them in full length. So strap in and let's go. Now let's jump straight into the episode with the owner of Society Snowboard Shop, located in Revelstoke, Canada, Carl Yost.
So, what's your name? How'd you get into snowboarding?
My name is Carl Yost, and I got into snowboarding because I was a ski racer kid when I was young, mm-hmm. and fucking racing between gates is stupid, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to hit jumps and stuff. So back in Banff, I was like the one skier pretty much riding with a big pack of snowboarder. Can spin and do grabs. This looks way funner, and I already skateboarded, so I made the switch, and I was like, yeah, this is, skiing is, it's fun, but no, it's fucking stupid.
How long ago was that?
Actually, it's funny because me and my buddy Andrew Hardingham were just talking about this, trying to figure out what year we started snowboarding, and I think it was the winter of 92, 93, or 93, 94, uh-huh. somewhere around there.
Tanya Harding time.
Olympics, oh, 94. Yeah. Yeah, just...
to the face.
Taking
to the
knees,
knee.
Yeah.
So you and Hardingham... Is Hardingham from... Where's Hardingham from?
From Banff.
He is from Banff?
Yeah.
Where does he live now? Is he living...
In Banff.
He still lives in
oh,
Banff?
Oh, yeah, he's still there. Oh, he's a lifer. He's,
yeah,
never
he's one of my
anywhere.
Favorites. He's always been one of my favorites. Such a... what I'd call like a tie-dye individual. Just yeah. like so amazing.
Yeah.
How is he so funny?
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So he's, I didn't know he's from Banff.
Yeah, him, myself from Banff, Minicky's from Banff. Like, we had a really good crew back in the day.
And was it just three of you? Kind of, how big was the crew back in the day?
Oh, it was pretty big. Like, we had our buddy, like, Guy Nyland in there and Shane Mooney, who was part of Rude Boys there uh-huh. for a long time.
Shane Mooney, is he related to Jess Mooney?
No.
No, okay.
No relation.
Okay, still not related.
And then our buddy Robbie Ford, our buddy Derek Mongovius, and then Jonathan Moore moved up from the States. Yep. And kind
John of, was from the U.S.?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't
and
know
then
that.
He came up to Banff, and they skipped him a grade up because he was smart. So, you know, it was more a reason for us to bug him and make fun of him. Uh-huh, uh-huh. But he was kind of like the guy who was all, like, we're at Norquay, pre-seasoning hits and stuff, and... He was, you know, we're doing front threes, back ones, front ones. Jonathan was doing like cab ones, cab threes, cab fives.
Doing everything backwards.
Always a step ahead of everybody uh-huh. else.
Uh-huh. He's like 45?
No, Jonathan's about the same age as Manicky.
Oh, okay.
He's probably 43, 42.
Dang. Because I met Jonathan one time because I was living with Sean Johnson in Squamish.
yeah.
And Jonathan was filming back in, way back then for, was it going to be? What ended up being Child Support, I think, the year before, because it was going to be a Derelictica film. And that
okay.
was when he started Stepchild, and then they made it and turned it into Child Support.
Yeah.
And Jonathan came out a couple times with us. He was so sick.
Yeah.
He was
such
a maniac.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's sick. I didn't know he was from, or grew up in the Banff crew as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The Banff Boys, we used to call each other. Very, very creative name.
The very, 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 very sick name.
Yeah.
The Banff Boys.
That's all we can think of. Fucking idiots.
Fucking idiots. Well, so you grew up with Manicky and this crew.
Yeah.
And you're from Banff. You're born in Banff.
Born and raised, you bet.
Why did your parents move to
Oh, my
Banff?
Parents. Oh, well, my mom lived in Two Hills. Grew up in Two Hills just outside of Edmonton. Uh-huh. So if you've been there yep. and seen where Ryan lives, you could realize why you would want to move 100%. Away from that.
I still wonder yeah. why Ryan lives where he lives always.
Yeah. And then my dad actually was from Austria.
Okay.
And at the tail end of World War II, they kind of like the family ditched And when they came up to Canada, they came into Calgary, and all my dad's brothers and sisters and parents, everybody got off the train, and my dad saw mountains, and he's like, no,
I'm staying.
So he came to Banff, kind of came out on his own, but immediately, like, ran into a bunch of people he got along with really well. Like, his old crew was the guys like Mike Wigley and Hans Moser and all the old school, like, you know, Squarehead guides and stuff like that. And then he went up to Sunshine Village, and he was head of the Sunshine Ski School. And at the same time, Hardingham's dad was head of, like, I don't know if it was mountain operations or, like, maintenance. So they're up there at the same time. And that's where my dad met my mom. And then,
then
they just stayed in Banff.
That's pretty sad. Yeah. Well, your dad's kind of like, old school royalty. If he's hanging out with that crew of people, that's pretty sick.
And for a while, he was actually chief commissioner of the Canadian Ski School.
Oh, that's
as well. And then at Sunshine Delirium Dive, my dad and his buddy Ken Baker were the first people down that. And my dad went first, Ken went second, and then they got drunk and named it at the bar that night. They're like, that run was sick. Like, I guess we got to name it now. And I don't know which one. One of them was like, I don't know what we got to call it, but I was delirious while we were riding that. And that's how Delirium Dive came around.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah, so.
How do you feel about you starting to snowboard? Do you have any animosity towards it? Since he was kind of a diehard?
At first, a little bit.
I mean, head of the Ski School Canada.
Yeah.
And then son. Are you the firstborn son?
I am.
Yeah, firstborn. Yeah. Goes to the dark side.
At first, he was a little bit, because I was a competitive ski racer, you know? Yeah. I was like that kid who, if I didn't place in the top 15 and get points, I was like damn near in tears because I was so pissed off at myself.
Yeah. But,
and then I realized how much I hated that mentality.
Yeah.
But then it was very, very quickly on after he didn't care. He was just like, you're in the mountains, you're riding mountains, this is rad.
Yeah.
So he was pretty supportive and pretty stoked.
I understand. I was the same. My family were skiers, and then my sisters were skiers, and I was a skier, but the same thing. I just thought snowboard was more fun.
Yeah.
And the same thing.
Dude, that's it. Like, tricks, jumps, like...
Going slow is fun on a snowboard, not fun on skis.
No, absolutely.
But then, how did you get into the, say, the commercial side of the snowboarding world?
Well, I mean... I started work at I worked at this other shop called Abominable for a short stint, and I was
Abominable.
Yeah, in Banff.
Super hard to say.
Yeah. Abominable. and the guy who hired me promised me that I was going to be in charge of, like, the ordering for snowboarding stuff. All they really had was, like, Option was the only decent brand. Like, Option was rad. Everything else was kind of cheesy.
Yeah.
And then he quit shortly after, and I was like, fuck this. I don't want to work for this ski shop.
Yep.
And then eventually I started working at Rude Boys because, you know, I grew up only shopping at Rude Boys or Skaters in Calgary. Like, I refused to shop anywhere but, like, a core snowboard shop.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to get involved in that. And then I started working there. And I was just like, yeah, this is it. Like, I just want to be involved in the industry. I love it. Mm-hmm. So I used to organize events for them, the Rude Boys Enderbender, and ended up managing Rude Boys for a while, helping build Rude Girls back in the day with the rest of the guys there. And then I was like, either, okay, I can work for this guy named Ken Domoreski, who was doing Vans in Alberta back then, or I'm going to maybe start my own shop because I heard about Revelstoke and knew what was going to happen here. And then I decided I didn't want to be on the road all the time, so came out here. There was no snowboard shop here. There was a place that sold... You know, like tents to soccer balls to snowboards to.
Was that sort of FFS?
Yeah, exactly. Like, as a buddy of mine put it, not me. They sell everything from tents to tampons. But there was no true snowboard shop at all. So I came here and started this place. Kind of modeled it after the same Rude Boys idea, like core, legit snowboard shop. Sorry, no scooters.
Yeah.
No skis. We're just sticking to what we know and we love.
How have you seen the snowboard community here in Revelstoke change since you started the store?
Big time, for sure. But Revy always had a good snowboard scene. I mean, you had some old school legends here. You had Taylor Piercy, Scott Newsom, Greg Todds. Greg Todds invented modern day pow surfing with snowboard pads with Cholo Burns there.
I had it.
Yeah, I still have one in the package, and I have one of Greg's prototypes, and I got a rather large snowboard collection. So it was really good, because there was like the young crew too, like, you know, Sean Barrett, Taylor Roberts, Chris Curran, all those guys being taught by TP and crew. But when I came here and the mountain kind of expanded and everything, and like Keith Martin too, he's like a Revy born and raised kid as well.
Yeah.
I think it just like punched up because now they had like a shop that was like supporting them and stuff in a full big way. Because when I saw those guys, I was like, oh shit, You guys are the same as we were when we were young.
Yep.
Like just little punk assholes just wanting to snowboard as much as possible. And so I wanted to nurture the chaos a little bit.
I mean, because you probably see that as like that's a super important thing for snowboarding to support these.
100%. Like, me, I'm one of those guys too where it's like, I don't want to sound too crusty and jaded and stuff, but snowboarding culture is very important. And people supporting snowboard culture the right way is important. Like right now, seeing back in the 90s, it was like you were either a snowboarder or you weren't. Nowadays, there's people who snowboard and there's snowboarders. There's nothing wrong with that, but I mean, our culture is, I think, very important because when it comes to sports, there's almost no other sport in the world where the culture and the sport itself is just literally the same thing and one and the same. So I was like, yes, we need to keep that going and showcase how it should be done and like, you know.
No, but it's super important. People like you who take the time and energy to dedicate their time and energy to this, because without it, it will just disappear.
It'd just be Montec and dope snow and fucking idiots looking like kooks on the mountains. Yeah.
Because any kind of like industry or market or whatever always turns it into, without, if people leave it alone and they don't try to give their passion time to it, I think it always turns into a profit maximization situation.
100%. And the thing is when you look at brands and brands who do things the right way, like, it's not hard to make a good product these days. Like, anybody can do it out of a decent factory. Anybody can make a decent product, but what are these companies doing to support snowboarding, to give back to the culture, to give back to the industry, and support the right people and the right way? Like, one thing that's really annoying these days is these ambassadors getting flow and product, and it's more so on the girls' side of thing, when there's these other girls who are working so hard, skilled, passionate, and they're barely getting support because maybe they're not as pretty a face or any of this other bullshit. So. That kind of stuff is really annoying. So we want the brands who are doing it the right way. And that's why also you should walk into a shop and in the local area, you know, in our area, you want to see Dinosaurs Will Die and the small brands and Wired alongside, you know, Nitros and Rides and Capita and stuff like that. And hopefully when you go into all these different shops in different areas, you see that right representation
of snowboarding.
Yes, exactly. The small brands, the big brands, but the people who are doing it the right way and supporting the industry in the right way.
Do you think snowboarding is like a young man's game?
I think freestyle snowboarding is a young man's game. I think big mountain riding is the experienced man's game.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and I think the guys who dominate that is the ones who come from the freestyle background. You know, everybody's like, oh, ooh, Jeremy Jones brought freestyle to the backcountry. You're like, no, he didn't.
Yeah.
Noah Selaznik and Mike Rankwit and those guys did. Those guys were like, when Noah was like ollieing off spines and AK, you're like, this is fucked up. Yeah. Like, nobody's done this before. This is, why is he doing this? This is gnarly.
And the Johan run where he's like just lip sliding, like so sick.
Oh, the Viking?
Yeah.
Olofsson, that guy was always fun to watch.
So sick.
He's a wonderful menace, that guy.
Well, the snowboard videos, he's a wonderful menace. That guy's amazing. He's like fat as hell now. He's so sick.
I got him so drunk at a party here once, and then he got kicked out.
Classic.
For being a meathead. And
classic Scandinavian, like these dudes. Yeah. They just go like, oh, we're drinking. Okay, boom.
Yeah. I actually like got into a wrestling match with, like, he was over with a couple like girls, and I got in a wrestling match with one of their dads who's like in his 70s and shit because we were so drunk. And Johan and Al Clark were outside. Johan kept picking at Al Clark, and Al Clark was like full on, like, haymaker swinging at him, trying to knock him out. And it's like awesome. You guys are idiots. This is so, so rad.
Dude. How important have snowboard movies been for you in like shaping or influencing your life and choice of living this way?
God, like the most important thing almost, you know? Like these days it's lost so much. But back then, it was, you're waiting. You're sitting there waiting for the videos to arrive, and you're anticipating because you haven't seen anything except maybe shots and mags. Other than that, you haven't seen a thing. You don't know what new tricks are going to be out, what people are doing, and you're just dying to see it. Now everything's leaked, and just I kind of feel bad for the younger generation not having that, where they're waiting for this video to show up. The shop gets them, and then everybody buys a video that's different, and then you grab beers and you go to your buddy's house and you watch all of them in a row and you're just so hyped to see that. Because I mean, we didn't, like, lessons, like, come on, nobody does lessons. Lessons are stupid. You're watching videos, that's your lessons right there. And then, you know, when the level got stepped up, like when Stomping Grounds came out and all of a sudden you're seeing Daniel Frank do those like Switch 7 rodeos and you're like, what the fuck was that? Like, that was next level. Like, I've never seen anything like that. Or like watching Peter Line do corks and you're like, what? I was even just going sideways. Like, I never even thought you could do that. So I think videos were what taught everybody tricks. It's like, you didn't know what to do or you didn't know what was possible until you saw somebody else do it sometimes. And it was all through videos.
Yeah, same. For sure. Definitely different this generation. With it, you see it all the time. But, I mean, I still think, I went to, it's like 3 or 4 years ago, in Banff, there was Wasted Youth premiere. And I was under the impression, not under the impression, like, whatever, jaded by it, but that snowboard video premieres were kind of dead or whatever. And I went to this one, and it was so sick, because there was just a local crew community there.
Was that at the bowling alley?
The bowling alley? No, it wasn't at the bowling
alley. That wasn't during when you guys had the Nitro sales meetings and stuff?
No, it was like the year before that.
Oh, the Dancing Sasquatch.
Yeah, in there. So many people, and people were hyped.
Yeah.
And like that was amazing.
That was super fun. I was there. I was the one who kept getting kicked off the mic because I was drunk.
And where I remember you from, actually.
I don't even remember, but I remember like when we gave away the board, somebody told me, I was like trying to do snowboard trivia and nobody could get it. I'm like, you don't even know anything.
Just yelling
spat
at
on the board and gave it away.
That happens.
I don't remember that. So
that happens whenever I get on the mic at these giveaways at the bar thing, and I always get drunk too, and it's so inappropriate, the stuff I end up saying. And now it sucks because people film it and they show it to me the day afterwards, like, dude, look what you said yesterday. I'm like, yeah, it was pretty funny.
Ooh.
That's so good.
Ooh. it's okay. That needs to happen.
It's for sure. I'm okay with it. I think it's super fun. But how important is like that Wasted Youth crew for this area or the Canadian snowboarding?
I think it's
matter?
So for Canadian snowboarding, it's definitely it's big because like one of the things I like these days is watching small local crews kind of and what they come out with.
Yeah.
And yeah, you see 8 billion crews from Minnesota doing. Mm-hmm. Handrails and hitting the same features as the Dust Bunnies and stuff, but which is rad and it's like sick and I love to see it, but other than Wasted Youth, I don't see any crews, small crews, local crews that are doing full free ride videos. So it's rad to see that like the boys doing that. And
I think they're like maintaining that style of snowboarding and also this like reach for people who like can watch this and think, oh, we could go do that. We should go do that.
Yeah. The only other crew this year I saw doing that wasn't like a, you know, like a supported money-wise crew or like actual bigger riders was the Beetle Gang out of Quebec. Mal Saint-Valin. And it was like, they're just free riding in Quebec. And I'm like, this is the only other Canadian crew that I've seen do a free ride video. Uh-huh. Like, come on, people need to get it together and get out there more.
Yeah, this I'm impressed. I'm like inspired by those dudes because I mean they do it by all their own dollar, pretty much, right? They make these happen.
A little bit of my dollar.
apologize, but like support.
Just bugging,
They don't get the support. Like, you know what I mean? And it takes a lot of energy to go do it.
It takes a ton of energy and like a ton of money out of your own pocket and everything. And that's why one of the reasons why I like supporting the boys so much is one because again I see myself and my buddies as when we were young. And I see the same thing. And two, because I feel like they're the type of people who need to be supported and have the opportunity to kind of, I don't know, showcase snowboarding how it should be and how they like to do it.
Yeah. And they do it 100% authentic, I think. Because, like, we went out yesterday with them. And it was just like, go there, set up the spot, get the camera looking. Everyone's helping each other. They're hyped for each other.
We've got a lot more professional over the years, that's for sure.
No, but it's sick. It's just full, 100% authentic snowboarding with the homies. Yeah.
Like, even if you watch the videos from the first one till now, you've seen how much it's changed. But I did like, I like in the first couple how there was more party footage and kind of throwback to the Wildcat days.
Yeah. I mean, that's just natural progression of partying up and then don't show so much, don't do so much. Yeah, well, you get.
They're still young. They're fine.
They're still young. I guess they are their 30s.
Yeah.
30s.
30s. That's young-ish.
What do you think about their, how they've been able to adapt their life to work and then just snowboard? Because there's not many people who do that in this world, like for that long. Like you do it in your early 20s and then like you get sucked into the society of just like get in line, this is your job, this is what you're supposed to do. For me, it was super impressive to see how they just continue on this path of doing what they do and trying to make snowboarding work in their life.
I think that's the difference between somebody who snowboards and a snowboarder right there. It's like, there's like, you know, through history, there's been a lot of riders out there who have done that kind of thing, working all summer long just so they can ride all winter. And the boys, like, you know, shift work is good so they can get out and ride and have those days off. But I think that's like what more people need to understand is like, that's when, you know, when people say snowboarding is a lifestyle versus a sport, this is the example of it. You know, like literally working super hard just to get out there and do that and not make anything off of it. Mm-hmm. You're just doing it for your own, for yourself. Just basically doing it because you personally want to film a part and progress yourself and, you know, just be out there with the homies.
Yeah, which I think is commendable. For me, it's inspiring because that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I
that's what we all want to do, you know? Yeah. Absolutely. So don't open a snowboard shop because then you get to snowboard less.
That's true. Don't work for a snowboard company because then you get to snowboard less too as well. Right?
Busy season is our prime time and we don't get to take advantage as much. But at least we get to help have control over the industry and have our say. That's the big thing, making sure that we can help shape the industry in the right way.
How important is that for you?
I'd say it's pretty important for me because, again, I'll reference those brands like Dope Snow and Montec and stuff like that, which are just culture vultures and, and you know, like direct to consumer. The brands who really support stores and your brick and mortar, like that's your foot soldiers. Those are the people out there every day helping people on vacation, fixing broken ladders and ratchets and tweaking your boots and stuff so that you can ride and have fun. And without that, people need to realize, like if you're buying everything online or you're buying from these brands that don't support brick and mortar shops, they're going to fade away, and then when you walk in with a broken ratchet, it's going to be like, sorry, bud, you're out of luck. Order it online. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Snow's not going to wait for you. Mm-hmm. Like, so I think shops, also making people feel comfortable. So when they come in and that newbie who's never set foot on a snowboard comes in and doesn't get vibed out and literally feels comfortable and is like, wait a minute, this person trying to sell me gear actually cares about my riding experience and wants me to have fun and be safe out there. It's a two-way street. Like, the shops have to do it, the companies have to do it, and that's the only way snowboarding is going to truly survive.
Yeah, that's my biggest fear, is that it's, like, people like you don't continue to come up to support it. That's, like, my biggest fear is that, like, say, who's going to come after you?
Yeah.
Right?
Who's gonna carry the torch and keep this going? Because, and that's it. Your shops and your brands are the ones supporting these crews who are getting out and they're doing it because, you know, without that, then you don't get to showcase snowboarding in the right. It's just going to be all rock star, like snowboard porn, like, like wham, bam, there's your double cork, see you later, triple cork, whatever they're on, the flippy do, whatever they're on these days.
Quad cork. Soon the pentacork.
Yeah, 18 billion and three spins.
That's true. What's more important? After you've run the snowboard shop for a long time, sold stuff, product or the people?
For
snowboarding.
People, how do you mean people? Do you mean people in the industry? Do you mean just like random people?
I mean people by what has greater value, I guess. Is it the people who are in the industry, the people who are the importance of the focus on the people or the importance of the focus on the product?
I wouldn't say one or the other. I mean, you have to have a good product.
Yeah.
But everybody can make a decent product these days as long as you're not an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, and you have a decent factory. So the product is important because obviously it has to hold up to what riding is these days. It's not like we're riding the garbage we were riding back in the early 90s.
Yep.
But when it comes to other side of things, like people are huge because, I mean, when you look at the history of snowboarding, some people would ride certain brands because they identify with that team and that style of team.
Yep.
You know, like for a while there, Rome was all punk rock. So all the punk rocker guys were like, that's my brand, you know, and where they identify with a certain rider. Like look at guys like Mark Frank Montoya and, you know, and how many followers he had just because he was being himself.
Still, we had a, Mark Frank was on Nitro for a while. They had the promo board.
Yeah.
Best board model we've ever sold.
Oh yeah?
Isn't that insane?
Yeah. Doesn't surprise me.
It's so sick. So sick.
And that's it. And also, like, the riders showcasing what you could do on the gear. Like, if you want to talk about old riders, look at Lucas Hoffman back in the day when it was like, here's the jump, here's the landing, here's Lucas way the fuck down here and stuff. And being like, holy shit. Like, pushing the riding is definitely huge. I don't know. That's a tough question because it's kind of like the gear's important.
Yep.
But the riders are very important because, one, you're showcasing the product and what it can handle, and the other, you're showcasing the people who are pushing the sport and the industry and, you know, again, showing that you're supporting the culture.
Do you see, have you seen after, how many years have you had the shop here now?
15.
15 years. That's commendable.
Thanks.
That's sick. That's not easy to have any kind of store, retail store, 15 years.
No. They always say the first 50 is the hardest.
And a seasonal store. By that means, in a way. I mean, you do skate as well. But it's like very specific.
Yeah. But clothing is like our number one all around, which is good. But yeah, you're right. No, it is seasonal and it is weather dependent as well. Like you have a bad snow year, sales aren't going to be as good. You have a really good snow year, but you didn't pre-book for it. Nowadays, especially with shortage, it's like, are you running out of product?
Well, what's your biggest, what's your biggest hurdle now or in the future for keeping the store open? Or what are you most scared about?
People not understanding maybe the importance of supporting the right brands and the reasons why, and chumps out there like feeding people bullshit lines and you know, like it's up to the shops again to do it the right way, but some people are more focused on sales just for the sales of it, where, you know, you need to support the shops that are in it for the right reasons. Yeah.
No, I think that's a super important message that all the snowboard brands and all the snowboard people need to continue telling the people out there that if you want snowboarding to stay the same, or be as cool as it is, not even stay the same, just be as cool as it is, you need to buy from these brands and buy from your local shop, or at least somewhere that you see that there's a soul to it. Like you're buying from people, not from numbers kind of thing.
I did an Instagram post about this a few years ago where I just said that, like, you know, people have been asking this question, like, and it's been in the media and stuff for years, where it's like, are you supporting the right shop? Does your shop owner snowboard? Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's the wrong question. Anybody can strap on a snowboard and be like, I snowboard. Mm-hmm. It's like, is your shop owner a snowboarder? Mm-hmm. That's the more important question. Do they actually, like, live snowboarding like so many of us do, where it's literally our whole, like, you know, not our whole lives, but it is at the same time our whole lives. And then I just kind of went on a little rant about it, and then I posted a bunch of other shops because I'm a firm believer in the community of snowboarding. Like when somebody calls from Banff and says, do you have this? I'm like, did you check Rude Boys first? Mm-hmm. If they don't have it, then I'll sell it to you, but check them. If you're in Golden, you got to go to Dark Side, you know, see Robin, she's awesome. Or, you know, go see Tim at Industry or Adam at Propaganda, or like there's this huge long list of different shops and different areas, like The Truth and Kamloops, and I want everybody to support their local core shop in all those different areas. And I made that in the post and then just posted like 10 pictures of different shop owners enabling their shop and showing pictures of them riding, because it was like, this is the right question, these are the right people to support, and why. And it's like, it's teaching, it's all about teaching people the reasons.
How was that received?
It was received pretty good.
Yeah,
all by industry people mostly, of course.
Of course
But everybody like in the industry gets it.
Yeah. It is, honestly, it's like anything in this world. Like you support like your neighbor kind of thing.
Yeah.
Support a human being.
Well, and it's like also, support somebody, but also make sure they deserve the support.
Yeah.
You could have a core shop and they could be run by assholes or people who are, I shouldn't make any direct references. It's going to be like people who are slinging cocaine out the back door, you know, it's like, you know, they may be a snowboard shop, but doesn't mean you should be supporting them.
Yeah.
You keep that one out because I'm referring to a specific shop. But, you know, it's up to the shops to be doing it the right way too. So you shouldn't support somebody just because they're a snowboard brand or just because they're a core brand or core shop. They still have to do things the right way,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's for like all the ground floor shops and employees to teach people as well.
Is it hard to keep, because as only a snowboard store, you have people coming in, working, like, is it a pretty high turnover with people coming in since it is seasonal?
Not since I got Pockets over there.
She's hanging in.
Hightower? No, oh, she's outside.
Not even
slacking off. Not even in here, not even working. She's outside, probably just
chilling.
Drinking with Willisco. No, it's good. I was just, you're good. Oh, nice. There you go. I see you over there. Yeah, like over the years, especially at Rude Boys, we were like, when I was managing there, I think we had like 16 staff.
Mm-hmm.
And we did have to go through some people. I think Shane and Manicki liked it when I was manager because then they made me fire people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he didn't have to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I had to be the asshole. But when you find that right staff and that good staff, it's like, it fits together so well. It's like, you're like, you know, as a shop owner, you got to be like, I'm treating you well and showing you how appreciated you are, and making sure that you keep that relationship going. Because that's the people, it's like, well, I mean, look at Rude Boys, you know, it's Rob and Greg who started that place.
Mm-hmm.
And then it passed on to Shane and Manicki, who both worked for the shop, mm-hmm. you know, and that's how it changed hands. And that's generally how core shops change hands. Unless you just put it out to the market and you're looking straight for money, it's mm-hmm. like, no, it should almost be inherited by your staff who is killing it,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to carry the torch in the right way, and they're going to keep the industry going in the right way. So having long-term clutch staff and showing appreciation and treating them well is super important.
And therefore, that's why people should purchase from these stores.
Absolutely.
To keep that going.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. And I could keep talking about the store stuff because I'm so passionate about it, because I feel like it's like two of the cornerstones in snowboarding is like the snowboard shop. In the physical shop, whatever it is, you know what I mean? It could be, the snowboard shop could be, in my mind, like the local club, because there is no snowboard shop or something, right?
Totally.
But you need to have these people who are passionate about it.
What do you do? Where do you go? Like back in the day, like before you have such a social media presence, if a team's on tour and they go to a zone, what are the fucking street handrails? What are the good features to hit?
You go to
the shop. You talk to them. Where are the parties going to be at?
Yep.
You know, like what bar do I hit? What restaurant do I go to? Yep. All that stuff. You go to the shop, and that's where it all starts. It's like Grosso talked about that with skateboarding, and he nailed it. And it's the exact same thing with snowboarding.
Yeah. It really is. Or else it will turn into windsurfing. I always go back to this. It'll be windsurfing. It's really fun. It's like windsurfing's the same. They travel for the wind.
Yeah.
Snowboarders would travel for snow. Core windsurfers travel for wind.
Yeah.
They dedicate a ton of time. They only buy gear based off of like either doesn't cost much or innovation.
Yeah.
Not because they're trying to be a part of something, because there is nothing to be a part of.
There's no culture there.
There's no culture.
Yeah. And that's, snowboarding is all culture.
Yeah. Which I think that's what makes it so special.
Yeah. And I mean, like, again, shops, it's like, which couch are you going to crash on or floor are you going to crash on? And that's the thing, is like, it's opened up.
Yeah.
It's like, you could have somebody you've never met before, but they're part of the industry and, you know, they come recommended from friends and you're like, oh shit, you're out here for a few days? Dude, yeah.
Stay
at our house. Yeah, you got it. And then you can go out and do your thing.
Yeah. I don't think there's too many golf buddies out there where you get the golf buddy, like, I'm going to go play 18. Yeah, I got a friend coming who'll crash with you. I don't think that happens.
Yeah, Daly's on my couch right now, just passed out from too much fucking Jack Daniels. And speaking of which,
Daly is my favorite.
That guy is fucking legit. Golf culture.
Yeah, he's golf. He's like the only golf culture. He is golf culture. John Daly, God, so sick. Sagan mouse.
I know, right? Big fat dude, just drinking and smoking.
He would win shit and then go to the casino and lose it all that night, just partying.
I love it. The anti-athlete.
Yeah, he's an anti-athlete. Now they're pretty serious snowboarding.
Even in snowboarding, yeah. Like, the thing is like, they're the athletes.
Yep.
And those are the people, like, mainly going for the fist points and stuff.
Yep.
Fist points.
Mm-hmm.
The
French connection.
Oh, God. But then, like, so many snowboarders back in the day, it's like, the night before a contest, you're all just getting piled up together, and it's mm-hmm. like, who can ride the best hungover? That's who's going to win, which is awesome.
Yeah, I think that's what I was always drawn to with snowboarding, is it was like the competitive side. That's why I like the competitive side, because it was just a time when everyone could get together. And now it still is, like, those, they get together, it's cool, but they're way more competitive, right? So everyone has a mission when they go to a contest, like, this is my angle, this is what I'm going to do, this is cool. But before you go to a contest, I'm going there to see this guy, this is going to be so sick.
That's one of the best things about snowboarding that I like, too, is, like, referring back to ski racing, you know, you're cheering for your other teammates, but... You know, the dudes from Red Deer, the dudes from Edmonton, it's like, fuck those guys. You know, we're going to fuck kill those guys. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But in snowboarding, it's like, doesn't matter who they are, where they're from. It's like, you're just cheering them on and like somebody beats you and you're high-fiving them and hugging them instead of getting mad and having rivalries. And there's not many sports out there where it's like that kind of camaraderie that literally encompasses competition riding.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's too. I don't think there is any. It referred to the Olympics, even the Olympics, right? The girls thing in the soap cell at the end of the soap cell. All the girls come like huge pile up.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen in any other individual competitive sport.
It's exactly.
Like, you don't see the dudes at the would be the 100-meter dash at the end, just like, yeah, man, so what,
dude? You ran so fast.
Yeah, so it doesn't happen. They're all just like, whatever, congratulations. I'm next year taking you down.
Yeah, exactly. And it's different again, and that all boils down to the culture that we have, and that's why it's so important to protect it and continue it, mm-hmm. keep it going.
This is good. What makes a Canadian? What makes a BC interior snowboarder different than most other snowboarders?
That's pretty easy. I mean, especially if you just say the Pacific Northwest in general. I mean, the biggest population is on the East Coast. So it's like park, park, park. Back in the day, pipe, 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 because that was everywhere. And then in areas like Banff, again, you know, riding Lake Louise, riding Sunshine, the lake had a sick pipe. Sunshine had a kind of shitty pipe, but it was still a pipe. Nikiska had a pipe. Norquay had a rad pipe and park. Lake Louise's park was amazing. So we had park. But there was all this free riding to go with it. And I think, again, those two go hand in hand. Like, if you're solely a park rider, they just can't big mountain ride the same. And if you're just a straight big mountain rider, you can't really bring the free spot style aspect of it. So I think the Pacific Northwest, and I'll say Banff over to the coast, because as soon as you go past Banff, it's all flat. Mm-hmm. But it bred these well-rounded riders who could do everything because we had everything available. Like, back at Lake Louise, we'd go up Summit, and we'd rip over into maintenance, and it's, like, trees with little poppers straight into, like, these super sketchy, rocky-ass chutes and cliffs. That's where Manicki got his nickname, Hatchet, or Can't Pick Lines. It's a good story. You should ask him about that one. And then we'd ride down, and it would pop you out onto Juniper Jungle right in the middle of the park, and then you'd get, like, a couple tables and a couple rails all in one lap. Not many places kind of had that available, so I think, like... We got those riders who are really skilled in the backcountry and still throw down in the park, and it's that good all-round mix, which is my favorite type of snowboarder, the all-rounder.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, to have that, you do also have to live in that location. You have to live in this location.
100%. Right? And that's why, like, I mean, in the States, and like in central states to the east, even like the Midwest and stuff, it's just you have these insane rail riders because that's what's available. Or Quebec. Out here, you know, you got good jumpers, good pipe riders, insane rail riders because that's what's there and that's what's available to them. So I think we're pretty spoiled and pretty lucky out here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, but also there's a lot of people who not take advantage of it, but utilize it, embrace it, use it, right? Because I guess being spoiled would be someone who you don't even do it. You got it, but you're just like, don't really need to.
That's fair.
But it seems like everyone here, my perspective of like an outsider looking into this area is like a lot of interior BC riders are dedicated, diehard snowboarders. Because it takes like a lot of effort, and you live in what a lot of people would say in the middle of nowhere, right? And you're like giving up whatever opportunities is out there to live here. And then you got to work for it, and you have to put time into it. And it takes a lot of effort to go do it.
It does.
So I mean, I see it as like they're hardcore snowboarders, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's easy to go to a park, line up in a handrail, build a jump, and hit it with 20 of your friends.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost anything, but, you know, to ride backcountry, it takes a lot of knowledge, skill. It takes a lot of equipment and experience and to get out there. And then when you get sledding in the mix, it's like, whoa. Well, you even look at your sled, it's $100, you know? If you just touch it or turn it on, you're like, oh, I just spent $100.
It's true.
It's not cheap. Yeah, so it's not as accessible. But for those that do it, especially like the guys like Darcy Keller, who is literally out there on his sled boarding all the time.
Dude, he told me he's gone out 67 days this year already.
This must have been a slow year.
That's amazing.
It's nuts. Like, Darcy's the guy out there blowing up sleds, just doing boarding laps on it, where everybody else is actually just rooping on their sled.
Yeah, he's sick. He is sick. He is a diehard, really good, whatever. It's true is wrong, but just like a snowboarder.
He's a hardworking snowboarder.
Yeah.
He's skilled.
Yeah.
But he's a hard worker as well. Like, he's out there doing it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was very impressed because this is the first time I met him, and it was so fun to go. He did a sick cab 5 first try, then he did a dope switchback 1. Looks like Devin Walsh.
Yeah, he's got that same kind of feel and style, and I love that rider as well. That's
and
why
he's so nice too. He'd like come down, he'd like land the cab 5. He's like, hey, do you want me to like double you up real quick to do it? And you're like, all right.
Yeah.
No. You go again. I want to watch you go.
Yeah.
But he's just like a nice guy. And that's
absolutely. Cool. He's one of the nicest.
And that's what snowboarding is awesome. Like, we met yesterday, and it was just like I felt like I'd known him. Or I could talk to him about whatever, anything, because we have this connection of snowboarding.
Yeah.
Which is so sick.
Well, that was a big part of it, too. Like, even to cut back to the 90s again, it's like with skateboarding, with snowboarding especially, you're out there on the mountain, and generally, there isn't that many of you. So if you go somewhere new, and you see somebody snowboarding and they're kind of hitting side hits and jumping, you're like, okay, I need to get over and talk to this person. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right away you usually have a connection and they're like stoked to go and show you the spots and stuff. It wasn't like surf mentality where it's like, stay the fuck off my break. It's like, no, let's go fucking hit my break. Let me show you where the hits are. Let me show you where the pow is. And I love how open and welcoming it is that way. Yeah,
I think it's still like I've personally experienced that it still kind of is that way, but it's not like the only snowboarder out there. But you can see the snowboarder.
Yeah.
Right. There's people who are out there, like you said, snowboarding.
Yeah.
But then you can still spot the snowboarder, 100%. And you can go and be like, oh, well, I'm taking care of this person real quick.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they will be like, yeah, follow me. I'll show you around. Don't go over there. That's where everyone is.
Yeah, stay exactly. Over this way. This is where the good hits are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it still is that way. But it's just like there's a lot more snowboarders out there, but you can spot the snowboarder.
Yeah.
A lot more than before. Usually someone with like a dirty jacket on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like the crusty kind of dude.
They won't be wearing head to toe Arc'teryx on a Jones board because that's going to be the kookiest snowboarder on the mountain. God. With their Rurock helmet.
The Jonesers. I like to call them the Jonesers. It's like a 50 plus group. Just out Jonesing.
Oh my God.
My friend, I just like making fun of shit.
Yeah, no.
My friend.
I love making fun of shit.
This guy named Jakob Williamson, who's an old snowboard dude.
Yeah.
Remember these guys, Hampus Mosesen and Jakob Williamson?
Those guys were super fun. Hampus is great to watch snowboarding.
So sick. But now Jakob is the distributor for Jones. And a couple other brands in his own distribution company.
Weird. Well, doesn't even follow. It doesn't seem to fit his personality.
Doesn't fit at all. So I always make fun of him. Like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm gonna go splitboarding. He's like, oh, out Jonesing again, aren't you, old man? It's so funny. He's like, yeah, but it's good. Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's okay. Chairless. You can't be chairless, or
you can't be chairless. No,
mechanical splitboards.
Mechanical splitboards. Chairless.
Know, snowmobiles.
Snowmobiles.
Chairless. Yeah. No, but that's another thing too. Is like just the brand and the type of personality it attracts.
Yep.
Nothing against Jones. Jones make rad boards. Jeremy Jones is a great big mountain rider. Yep. I'm still crusty if people are like, who's the best big mountain rider out there? It has been. I'm like, well, I'm biased towards Jonathan, but like, I'd still be putting the Axel Poport or Jean-Baptiste Charlet or those guys.
Axel Poport, I haven't thought about him in so long.
That guy's a beast.
Dude, a psychopath.
Dude, when he switch straight lining shoots.
I haven't thought about him. Yeah, he was nuts. He was a big mountain guy that I wouldn't fast forward. Back in the day.
No.
He would come on and be like, okay, let's watch this. This is going to be some tomahawk, some crazy shit is going to happen.
It's so awesome that you say that because that was a thing back in the day. It's like you get the new TB movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, Dave Hatchett's part. Bing. Fast forward. Yeah. You're like, you know, but some guys you'd watch. Tom Burt I would always watch too because that guy was just with his white sunglasses sending the gnarliest lines.
He was so sick.
Yeah, but we would fast forward the big mountain riders. Like, I just want to see the jumpers.
Yeah, I was talking to It was Keith. I was talking to Keith about the fast forward part, the Big Mountain fast forward part. And now basically it's like Instagram. It's like the quick swipe part. You see, like, it'll be like in your feed, something will show up, and it'll be like the kids will probably see like Jeremy Jones post, and it'll just be like, oh my God, get out of there. Or they'll like report it.
Yeah. Report it, yes. I want to start doing that. I'm going to report all the ambassadors and stuff like that when they're like those cheese balls who really snowboard. And I get it, random people identify with that level.
Yep, because there is some relatability to
there's
it.
Some relatability.
Like a marketing perspective.
But the thing is, oh God, those people should still be striving to get better and stuff like that. And that's where robot food came in. You know, it was like these movies where you had amazing snowboarding. You're watching David Benedict do the weirdest stuff. We're like, how does he even do this? Mm-hmm. Like, David Benedict is a genius on a snowboard.
Yeah.
And then they're hitting little side hits and playing around in the same movie, which takes this insane snowboarder and makes him relatable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where they had that was the genius combination of that. Is they were amazing at snowboarding. They had the wow factor, but then they also had the wow factor and the relatable stuff.
And the fun stuff. Guys and like Travis Parker, who's a great personality, or Scotty Whitlake, who... Always love watching Scotty Whitlake snowboard.
Yeah, that's, I think about that. That's what sucks kind of about the evolution of, like, the professional snowboarder now is that it's gotten to a level where it's been so specialized that, like, a lot of them are, like, super specialized in this and this, and then they don't show the variety, which means they don't also show the fun aspect of snowboarding because it's, like, too easy or doesn't make them specialized enough.
Yeah. And also, like, the style. Like, nowadays, if somebody's hocking a 16 whatever, once it's past 10, I don't count.
Yeah.
Stop counting. They spin, like, a 16 or an 18 whatever. They look the same.
Yeah.
Everybody looks the same. You do a quadruple flippy-do, it looks the same.
Yeah.
But if you go back in the day and you're, like, and you put Daniel Frank, Ingmar Bachmann, Cebu Kohlberg, Terrier, Jamie Lynn, Peter Line, any of these guys... and tell them all to do a back seven indie, you can tell exactly who's who solely by their style.
Yep.
And that's really, I think, lacking and missing these days. And guys like Devin Walsh still pays it forward that way.
Yep.
There are riders who you can really tell, but I mean, I feel like contest snowboarding is almost like knifing individual style.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure, because in any competitive thing, it becomes... consistency is what matters most.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a bad thing. I think that's a bad thing because that just promotes perfection, which promotes everyone's doing the same thing.
Totally.
Like there's no chance, like it's dangerous to take a chance.
There's no Sean Palmer winning big air comps because he does a 1 foot straight air.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff is lost now. And I'd like to see that come back.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully the kids aren't too scared to do it.
Yeah. Wimps. We've seen straight airs and video parts again, which is nice.
That is nice. Well, I mean, that's what Arthur Longo.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, Longo's got a good style going on right now.
That's where he saw this opening in snowboarding. I mean, honestly, he did it methodically. Like, he liked to snowboard like that, but he did it methodically where he saw that this is something that no one's doing.
Yeah.
And I'll do it because it's fun and he thinks it's cool.
And it's
and it was gnarly. Received so well.
Super gnarly, too.
And it's he's definitely someone holding the torch for that type of snowboarding. And it shows that people want to see it. I mean, you can literally see it in numbers of views on a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you want to go stats, you can see, like, there's actually people, by stats, this works.
Yeah.
So if you could easily sell it into any kind of corporate mind that this is an actual thing.
Yeah.
Over an influencer.
Which I actually kind of hate that people look at, like, stats like that.
That's the worst. It has no meaning.
Back in the day, it was like, oh, no, what are the stats? We don't know. You're rad and you're doing some rad shit, so we're gonna support you and have you a part
because
we just think you're doing something cool.
Yep.
Where nowadays it's like, what?
The numbers.
How many views are you getting? Mm-hmm. How many TikToks views do you have? And are you using songs that are trending right now? It's like back in the day it didn't matter. It's like, no, you use whatever shit you liked and what you wanted.
Yep.
So again, I feel like nowadays the social media thing is like destroying unique individuality.
Mm-hmm.
It's literally like taking a sport that was solely art-based almost with the way you did it and saying that's the wrong way to do it, you're doing it wrong, let's take the art out of it and make it more
generic.
Stupid. Generic.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
It really is. I never thought about that. That like social media, it is like a platform where everyone can express themselves and their individuality in a perfect world of social media. But what it actually is just like everyone has to fall in line to this that works.
It's stifling creativity and individuality.
Yeah. for the numbers.
Yeah, for numbers, for views, yeah. for likes.
I think a lot of brands, though, now are starting to shift away from that mentality of, like, numbered performance-based marketing to more, hopefully, more brand.
Some brands are.
Some brands, yeah. Not all.
The right, brand, think, the right brands are. More, the good brands
Because, like,
are.
I think even the good brands, like, for a little bit, you kind of like, oh, this kind of works. This is, like, an easy catch. We'll go over here. But I think a lot of them now are pulling back to, like, let's just invest back into, like, brand-building activities or whatever.
Yeah.
Which I think is important.
I agree.
It's so important. Or else we will just have TikTok kids.
Oh, God.
Or moms or dads just doing it all the time.
Yeah, don't mind me. I'll literally go throw up because of that shit. I hate it so much.
Maybe it's because
I'm old and crusty, but again.
No, I mean, there is that. Obviously, it's not part, like, for the kids who grow up now, that's like their world, right?
That's the norm.
That's the norm.
Yeah.
But they also are the ones who are, they're the ones in charge of cultivating it, too.
That's why they need the old men.
100%
drunk and yelling at them and shaking their fists, telling them what's right.
Well, they need the older generation to tell them like that's wrong, so they actually question themselves.
Yeah.
Because I think most kids today, you grow up and you're your own superhero, you're like your own star, and you can do nothing wrong actually.
Yeah.
So you need people telling you like that is whack. So they at least are like, what do you mean that's whack? My mom and dad say it's cool.
Oh my God! You know how many times I see this stuff online and I'm just like, oh my, somebody needs to tell this kid to take that clip off. Like, no tindies, sorry. Like,
there's a lot of tindies there.
There's a lot of tindies and tailfishes, and it's like we need to re-release the Travis Parker Unorthodox with, I have one in the basement, with the no-grab tape, being like, these are the no-grab zones. You know, like, people need to learn that again.
Yeah, there's a lot of tindies. I've actually noticed that the last couple years, too.
I'm sorry, but back in the day, you're not trying to be offensive. You're just like, tindy?
I mean, you wouldn't even do it for fun. Like, you wouldn't even be like, ha, look at me. You wouldn't even do that back in the day.
No.
You just, like, wouldn't do that.
No.
It's, like, not even funny. Like, that's
it's not even
whack.
Funny. It's just super whack, yeah. And style, like, again, style is getting lost in that. Like, people need to revisit and understand that a less hard trick, less difficult trick with good style outweighs the huck.
100%.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have given up anything in your life to do this?
A ton.
A ton.
A lot. definitely a lot of time, a lot of boarding.
Yep.
It's not easy running a shop.
Yeah.
You know, especially me, I started this place solo. So it's a lot of work. It's crazy time consuming. I mean, for the first few years, I was working 7 days a week. And then some days I'd come in at 9, 10 in the morning, and I'd leave at 2 in the next morning. You know, like that was my day, and then I'd be back at work for 10 o'clock the next day.
Yeah.
So you sacrifice a lot of time and a lot of things, but again, you get to help be a part of the industry and also work for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully one day, you know, retire with enough money to eat, you know, a steak or two.
A steak or two. High ambitions.
High ambitions.
But yeah, I mean, you live for the now. I think if you do own a snowboard shop or you do work in snowboarding, you work for today kind of thing.
Definitely. And right. I mean, like, there's good work trips, demo days. It's like, oh, shit, I got to go try snowboards for a couple days. That sucks. Or like, you know, when Ryan calls you up and he's like, yeah, we're going to Retallick.
Yeah.
Grab your crew. We're going to go for 2 days of boarding. You're like, ah, that's a really shitty work trip.
Yeah. I mean, there is that aspect of it. Is most people work to do this, and you work in this. Right? And that's amazing.
There's some perks.
There's some perks.
There's definitely some
there's
perks.
There's some big perks.
Yeah.
I always remember, because anytime you work in something, you get kind of burnt out sometimes. Or you question yourself, is this too easy? Should I challenge myself more? Whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
But I always look back, and I think, like, everyone I know works their ass off to do what I do, like, regularly.
It's a passion industry.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
100%. Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Thank you all for listening. See you in the next episode. And in the meantime, do yourself a favor. Go snowboarding.